This is the BioBalance Health Podcast, episode 18. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin, founder and medical director of BioBalance Health. With me today is Brett Newcomb, a marriage and family therapist and lecturer, and so many other things I can't even list them. Today we're talking about oxytocin, the cuddle hormone.
One of the things that I've been thinking about is that the work that both of us do is really focused on specifics while we look for patterns. When clients come in to see me, they usually come in with a specific complaint. And one of the things that I've learned through the years is the presenting problem is almost never the underlying problem. And so as I try to take the thread or the skein and follow it back to the core message, what I am looking for are patterns. Patterns that replicate and malfunction or function well, whatever it may be, to see the patterns in somebody's life. And as I have listened to you talk about your medical practice, I hear you say the same kinds of things. And one of the things that you and I have talked about, as you attempted to explain what you know and what you do to me, is that you began to be concerned about the deterioration effects of aging. And your clients were coming in and talking to you about the misery, the dissatisfaction, the depression, the lethargy, the effects of aging in their life, and that you started to try to track it back to its sort of initiating potentiator. And what you have told me is that the aging cascade starts with the diminishment in testosterone manufacture and estrogen manufacture, and that most of the aging effects that we can identify and treat individually, we can identify and treat at the beginning of the cascade through the work that you now do.
Right. And you know, it's interesting. Medicine is generally a, you know, when I went into medicine, I wanted to find out, okay, go upstream and find the initiating problem, fix that problem, be efficient, and then it will solve the other problems. And that's what I get to do now.
Yeah.
But training wise, most of us are trained by looking at one symptom and then treating that symptom and looking at another symptom and maybe finding a disease, but never finding what started all of that. So that's what I try to do in terms of diagnosis. And I find it like swimming upstream. It's not how other doctors tend to approach this. But when I have done this, patients came to me saying, I'm not old yet. I'm 40.
Yeah.
And my life's falling apart and no one has a name for it. And everybody tells me I'm just crazy or fat or lazy or whatever they, when I had my ovaries out, what they told me, you're getting old, get used to it. I was 47. I have to live to 100 probably with my family history. So I wasn't going to live to 100 like that.
Well,
so I had to go back and find out
your life in limbo,
right? And feeling terrible, and there was no name for that. So I had to then. This was over 9 years ago. I had to go backwards and find what happened first, because I didn't want to take 100 drugs just to feel somewhat better. I wanted to solve the problem, and the problem was that my ovaries were out and they were failing before that, and they didn't make testosterone. That's the first change in aging of both men and women.
So you wanted to move beyond the standard medical concept of symptom management.
Right.
And look at causative factors to see how far upstream you can go to make an intervention that is a systemic intervention.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I love doing.
And so in the last couple of months, you've gone to two different medical conferences on the specialization that is becoming medicine focused on aging and the aging process.
Anti-aging, they're now calling it reverse aging, which is really more descriptive.
All right. And coming back from those conferences, you've had your interest piqued by the discussion of a neurotransmitter that has kind of been off of the mainstream radar, but that is beginning to be recognized as one of the more critical neurotransmitters. In terms of very specific kinds of things, in terms of a hunger or a desire for touch, for intimacy, for bonding that isn't specifically sexualized.
That's true, but it also does affect
sexual But it also is involved response. In sexual responsiveness. Yeah, and that's what's fascinating about it. And you had me read a book by Dr. Thierry Hertog, who's French.
And you're the first person who's pronounced it properly besides the physician himself.
Well, there you go. That's because I studied.
You go to France
in Arkansas, where we talk that way. The title of the book is Passion, Sex, and Long Life, The Incredible Oxytocin Adventure. So talk to us about oxytocin and why he's so up on it and why he's written a couple of books about it.
Oxytocin is also referred to as the cuddle hormone in terms of the psychological world.
Mm-hmm.
And in medicine, oxytocin is the neurohormone. It's not exactly a hormone. It's not exactly a neurotransmitter, so they call it a neurohormone. And it's what we initiate labor with. I'm very familiar with this because I'm an OBGYN. Yeah. And we always gave Pitocin, which is oxytocin,
mm-hmm.
to women in an IV drip to make their labor go faster or to induce labor. But when you're not pregnant, men and women both have oxytocin and should have oxytocin, but it diminishes with aging. Oxytocin is the hormone that makes us want physical contact, makes us want to communicate with others, not be hermits, to want to be outgoing and caring and want to take part in our families and our communities. People with high oxytocin levels genetically, and usually that goes along with being young and genetically high in oxytocin, are people who touch, people who have very physical relationships with their spouses, people who are very outgoing, sales. They choose their specialty by who they are. There's by what's inside of them.
Better living through chemistry.
Right, right. Yeah. But that's what's inside of them, and it's inside of all of us to a different degree. So as we age, it then decreases. But what makes it decrease? Well, the first thing that makes it decrease is a lack of testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, I was listening to all of these lectures about this wonderful hormone called oxytocin. And I found that my patients generally don't need to add oxytocin because they have testosterone. And when we give them testosterone pellets, then their oxytocin goes up.
It's rejuvenated the same way that their testosterone is rejuvenated. So it's an automatic part of the process.
Absolutely.
For most patients.
For most patients who come to see me and I replace the testosterone the way I do it. Now, not everyone at this anti-aging conference understands the pellet, why pellets are better. But I could see that I don't need a lot of these other things except in specific patients who don't respond to the testosterone. Here's the example. Patient comes in and they're fatigued. They have no sex drive. They have no relationship with their family or their spouse. They don't want to go out anymore. They in general are fatigued. They don't feel good. There's no joy in their life. Mm-hmm. They don't want to touch anybody. They feel like they draw back.
So their life is shrinking inward.
Right. And they give me this as part of their problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at their lab, and I don't generally look at oxytocin because it's a very expensive, difficult test to do. And I look at their testosterone. Their testosterone's low, maybe their thyroid, a couple other things are low, and I treat that. They come in for their follow-up appointment, and they sit across from me at the at my table in my office. They cross their arms in front of them. They pull back away from me, and they look at me with a straight face and say, "I feel great."
Uh-huh.
They don't have expression. They don't get closer to me. They don't, like lean on the table and lean forward. They say, "I feel great," with no emotion. And then I ask them specific questions. Is your sex life better? Well, yes, my libido's better, but no, I don't like being touched still.
Right.
And so in this particular subset of my patients,
mm-hmm.
I then have to ask more questions about oxytocin symptoms. Things like joy and being more like your old self. Not everyone is outgoing.
Well, maybe their old self didn't have that either.
That's true. And a lot of people come back to me, and generally, even people who are anorgasmic, women who have never had an orgasm, after testosterone, have orgasms. Those that don't generally need oxytocin.
Mm-hmm.
And then that brings it back. There are certain things that lend to people who have never had oxytocin be a very high hormone in their hormone profile, and that is verbal and sexual and physical abuse as children stops the production of oxytocin. We withdraw. And that's not just a psychological thing. It's a physical thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's very hard to get over that. I know you deal with the psychological part of it, but it's hard to do that unless you have the hormone that actually helps you with that.
I mean, the psychological component of that I hear about are people that will say they are anorgasmic, that they've never had an orgasm. And as we discuss and explore that situation, what we concentrate on is safety and the mm-hmm. ability to be safe enough that you can relax. And then as you relax and you're not having adrenaline and you're not having anxiety issues that sort of insert themselves for your safety ahead of any other mechanical process of the body, as they can relax, then there's an increased potential for them to have an orgasm or to feel intimacy. But how do you get in a relationship with somebody that's safe enough that you can be that open with and that trusting with if you have an abuse history? Whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, or emotional abuse, if you have an abuse pattern in your life, then there are going to be walls up that protect you from abuse. But the cost of that is that you're not going to be available for orgasm or for nurturing intimacy.
Right. And those people, maybe even young people, that's where this hormone, this neurohormone, and the supplementation of it actually can happen without the testosterone. They're female and male hormones are fine.
Yeah.
They just don't have that one piece. So we can add that back with an under-the-tongue tablet or a nasal spray. And
The oxytocin comes that way. Sublingual. Okay.
So you can put it under the tongue twice a day, or you can use a nasal spray.
So you don't just use it the way that men use Viagra. It's not just for a sexual experience. It's for that whole interconnective physical component that allows emotional intimacy to become available.
Right. And it won't work if you're not missing it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not missing oxytocin and I give you oxytocin, it might make you tired and kind of, you know, just so relaxed that you're not going to be able to function well, because it is very relaxing, but it's supposed to make you relax. Some people get energized by it.
Ask a question just out of the blue that occurs to me. Would you say that oxytocin is then an enhancing component or an enriching component from foreplay and post-coital contact? Because I have clients that complain about both ends of that spectrum, that there is no foreplay or it's not satisfying, it's not sufficient, it doesn't set the tone, and that there's no post-coital intimacy, physical holding, hugging. He rolls over and goes to sleep. He rolls over and gets up. She gets up to go put a load of laundry in. You know, it's, so that sex becomes more of a physiological, functional impact than an intimacy impact. So would you say, or do you know, is oxytocin a part of all of that?
Oxytocin is a part of that. So we're talking about a different situation. We're talking about normal functioning people with normal testosterone, and they produce oxytocin. Uh-huh. So you're producing it most of the time, but certain things stimulate it, and they'll stimulate a surge of it.
Right.
Now, of course, we've talked about labor. And we start labor sometimes with breast stimulation, but in sex and in pregnant people, breast stimulation stimulates oxytocin. So that's part of foreplay, okay? Mm-hmm. Cervical stimulation also stimulates oxytocin. So moving the cervix, whether that be through intercourse or manually or...
So, no laughing.
I
used to teach history, and we always talked about in certain age of ancient civilizations, all roads lead to Rome. And so what I'm hearing is that all of these processes lead to neurotransmitters, which makes me remember that your brain is your most important sexual organ.
Absolutely.
And that's what all of your work is pointed at, being able to reconnect. Get
that's
the brain
right.
engaged again in its functional processes for the neurotransmitters and the hormone production going the right places in the right amounts, that also then brings my field into it of how to get the brain involved in terms of the setup, in terms of the perception and the framing of what it is that you're trying to do. And it needs both halves.
And if you can get somebody to, I mean, it's which came first, the chicken or the egg, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, foreplay is going to make both partners much more likely to produce a lot of oxytocin and bond. It's a bonding. It, you know, God made every hormone and every neurotransmitter for the benefit of bringing people together to have sex and children and then take care of the children and stay together long enough to keep, to bring the children to adolescence, but independence. So now that's like 25.
Yeah.
So it used to be like
27
12.
When they first leave home. Yeah. Well, and you know, my argument consistently is that foreplay is more than just a 10 or 15 minutes before you try to have sex. Foreplay is something that you start a day or two in advance and in teasing.
That's assuming you only have sex three times a week or two times a week.
Well, so I guess maybe it's just a constant behavior.
So maybe it's, yeah, it's a constant, foreplay is a constant behavior. The way you're discussing it, it's a mental kind of thought pattern. And that does actually mentally, you can stimulate oxytocin by doing that. But it also has to do with touching, and it's both partners. Mm-hmm. If one person pulls away, the other person is going to touch their partner and not, they're not going to get oxytocin from that. Mm-hmm. They're going to get norepinephrine and go, ooh, you know, I guess they don't want that.
So we're talking about things like hugs.
Right.
You know, that are intimate hugs. And I talk to clients all the time about what I call fence post hugs. You know, when people have been in relationships so long and their behaviors have become so mechanical and so automated that they're not paying attention and they're not engaged, but I hug you before I leave for work and say, bye dear, have a nice day. Mm-hmm. You know, I could be hugging a fence post. I'm not aware of you. I don't feel you. I'm not connected
and
to you.
And you're not getting any of the surges of the hormones or the benefits of that.
No, my mind's already in the car and driving to work and solving problems.
Right.
And it's not taking that moment to stop and just be connected to you. And so that is what I talk to my clients about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do fence post hugs. You know, work on taking 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever you can to turn all the outside world off and just engage your partner in eye contact, in a hug, in a caress, in a kiss, in an awareness. It's about paying attention.
And when you're paying attention, your hormones are surging. Now, here's what happens when we're in our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. If you've ever watched someone very closely aging, you notice that they become less huggy, less touchy, less emotional, less facial expressions. And if they are not replaced with any hormones, they become very stoic and alone. Mm-hmm. Even when it's a couple and they're sitting in the room together, I'm sure you see that.
Flat affect.
Flat affect, yeah. No ups and downs and no real warm feelings. When you're, I'm somebody who feels the person in
sort
the room.
Sort of pasty, overweight, lethargic. I think I'm describing myself here.
I was in a whole different realm. I was not talking
about.
Well,
it's all about me, Kathy. You have to
know.
It's all about me.
Of course it is. It's all about all of us when we're talking about this, but. So we'll all age this way if we don't replace our hormones. So we get more and more alone. We grow apart. It's not the golden years. It's the alone years.
Yeah.
And so you go to a nursing home, everybody's like into themselves, introverted, because they don't have the neurotransmitters and the hormones to actually make their brain want to go outside themselves and engage with someone else. It was I would assume, you know, if I was guessing why God did this, it was so that we wouldn't mind being thrown out of the group, you know, and thrown into an isolated kind of situation. It wouldn't hurt us so much because we wouldn't notice it.
Kind of the way when you move into the dying cycle that the body turns itself off. If you have time, if it's not a trauma, the body turns itself off in stages.
Right.
And it goes to the central core and then it dies.
Unfortunately, that's what aging is really all about, is slowly turning yourself off. However, we now live so long after the normal aging initiation at 40. Most of us live so long and not well. So this is all a part of my joy in seeing my patients come back well. You know, I talked to a woman yesterday who clearly has her testosterone fixed everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, every symptom, every social and physical symptom immediately was gone. Her relationship is better. She has a closer relationship with her boyfriend. She's in her 40s, mm-hmm. 50 actually, and with her love. And now they're not so distant. Even though they live at a distance, they still have a sexual relationship now, just verbally, until they can meet up.
Phone sex.
Right. So in that way.
That's great.
In that way, she's.
That's foreplay.
That's foreplay. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's foreplay and something else.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that is in your mind, but it's producing this neurohormone and many other neurohormones that, you know, we need to be vibrant, healthy, complete human beings.
So if I'm harassing and tormenting my wife and she says, why are you doing that? I can say, I'm trying to stimulate your oxytocin.
Right.
It's just science.
It's just science.
It's just science.
Yeah.
It's an experiment. Yeah.
You can absolutely do that, and we'll talk about that next week.
You know,
week
as Captain Kangaroo would say, with the old clock on the wall.
Yeah.
Next time, one of the other ancillary hormone-related issues that is so critical and that we haven't talked about, we made reference to a couple times, is the thyroid and mm-hmm. how that plays a part in this as well. So maybe next time we can focus on that.
Yeah, we will focus.
We'd like to remind people that if they have questions or comments that they'd like to make in response to these conversations, they can contact your office by email, mm-hmm. and you'll give them the address for that.
You can email podcast@biobalancehealth.com. We also invite you to visit our website at biobalancehealth.com. We have lots of videos and we have links to our blog. And it tells you all about the services and the supplements, skin products, and everything else that I've developed to make people feel better and look better and be younger. If you'd like to call my office for an appointment, my number is 314-993-0963. And my blog is at drkathymaupin.com. It includes transcripts of these podcasts. So if you'd rather have somebody read them rather than listen to them, then they're written down. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brett.
So rather than join the Army, if you're too old to join the Army to be all that you can be, you can just call Kathy. And she can help with that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's my job. That's all my calling.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin.